True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Hey, welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today. It's August 4th, it's Wednesday, and that means it's time for Warriometer Wednesday. I'm Chris Towers, joined by Scott White. We're going to talk about some players we're, you know, potentially worried about. At least find out if Scott's worried about it. That's all really anyone wants to know. We're going to look at some trade targets with, fantasy trade deadlines coming up. I'm going to ask Scott where we're at on some, kind of up and down players. And Tuesday's biggest performances, including, well, why don't we just kick it off with... Scott, can you do me the honors of your best Susan Waldman impersonation?
I think I'm good at this time. I've done enough.
Oh my goodness, goodness gracious! My goodness gracious, player. Scott, you want to go first?
Well,
who gets Joe Adell? I'll take Joe Adell. He's been my guy.
That's fine.
Joe Adell batted sixth in his season debut for the Los Angeles Angels. Was called up as expected. Had a really good game. Went 3-for-4 with 3 RBI. Had a walk. Had a stolen base. 2 doubles, I believe. 1 single. Only 1 batted ball hit over 81.2 miles per hour. But that's a heck of a way to start your season for Joe Adell. And it's very promising after, his notable struggles last season. Obviously, it doesn't do much to change Joe Adell's outlook, but given that he was really hot at AAA, has been hitting well the whole season, it's certainly better than most of the debuts we've seen so far this season from highly touted young players. I guess Adell's not technically a rookie anymore.
I mean, Wander Franco's debut was great.
That was pretty good.
Jared Kelnick's second game was great. So, it doesn't mean much on its own, but, it was nice to see, for sure.
Yeah.
And for all the time Joe Adell was up last year, let me check the game log. Okay, you can't really say it was his best game as a major leaguer so far because he did have a 2-homer game last year, last August. But it's his first 3-hit game.
Still pretty good.
Yeah, definitely one of the best games of his career. I'll go so far as to say the second best game of his career.
Yeah, obviously going against the Rangers.
First of this year.
Going against the Rangers, Jordan Lyles, not exactly the toughest level of competition, but... a very good debut for a guy who frankly looked completely overmatched last season. Had that strikeout rate below 25%, I believe, in what was his last 25 games, Scott, I think was the number you were citing. That's all he has to do. If he can be a 25-26% strikeout rate guy with the power that he has, and with the potential speed, at least he does kind of remind me of Byron Buxton a little bit when it comes to the stolen bases, and that he was a really efficient base stealer in the minors, but he never had, huge stolen base numbers. I wonder if, he might be someone who could steal more bases than he actually will, but, still projects over a full season, if everything goes right, to be maybe a 25 homer, 15 stolen base guy. So, that's the kind of player we're talking about here with Joe Adell. Obviously, even before his season debut, he should have been added in most five outfielder leagues, and that remains true, I would imagine.
Yeah, it remains true. And look, I'm not saying you shouldn't add him in a three outfielder league. Obviously, it's who you're cutting to pick him up, I presume, is that's going to be much more painful.
Yes.
But they're, it's never wrong to take a chance on upside. And I mean, Joe Adell has, you know, I think if you're talking ceiling, 25 homers, 15 steals is probably selling him short.
That's right, right. I mean, like in the near term, you know, not like ultimate ceiling. This is a guy who's been, you know, probably one of the three best prospects in baseball going back to 2019.
Right.
Scott, what about your oh my goodness gracious player? You got someone for us?
Well, I'm going to go with somebody who also made his 2021 debut, and in fact, his major league debut, ooh, and that is Yankees starting pitcher Luis Gil.
Gil.
G-I-L. Looks like Gil, but it's Gil. And he shut down the Orioles over six innings in his major league debut, walked one, that struck out six.
Mighty Orioles lineup.
Well, you see what they did to...
I mean, look...
Who was it just the day before? Oh, Andrew Heaney.
It doesn't matter who you're facing. If your first major league start looks like this, it's a good one.
Yeah, no, it's great. And like the stuff is definitely measures up. He hit 98.5 on his fastball. It's a high spin fastball over 2,400 RPM. It would be one of the, you know, if he sustains that, it'll be one of the highest spin fastballs in the majors. So definitely good stuff. He has a slider, he has a changeup, so well-rounded arsenal here. 23 years old, so it's not like, you know, it's not like they pushed him to get him up here at a crazy young age. Inconsistent minor league numbers. In fact, his last two starts at AAA, the very last one, he gave up six earned runs in an inning and a third and walked four. The one before that, six no-hit innings with nine strikeouts. So, like, very up and down season. But clearly the stuff is good. The biggest hesitation for me in terms of whether I would take a flyer on Luis Gil is how long is he going to stay in the rotation?
Yeah.
He's getting this chance because Garrett Cole's on the COVID IL.
Jordan Montgomery as well.
Jordan Montgomery's on the COVID IL. Yes. Domingo Herman just went down with a shoulder injury. I don't think we really know the severity of that one. But even so, Luis Severino made a rehab start just today.
Yep.
So he's on his way back. Now, you know, obviously life finds a way, right? And if Luis Gil keeps pitching well, maybe there will be a path for him. But I suspect it'll be a short stay in the majors for him.
You know, with rookies this season, you know, it's how it always starts. Ooh, ah. Later there's running and screaming.
I see what you're doing.
And, you know, gotta make another reference to the Bloom. Some of you younger kids may not know. Jeff Goldblum, The Lost World, Jurassic Park.
I would assure you Frank does not know.
I could see that, yeah. I could see Frank not knowing a reference to Jurassic Park, but I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. All right. So that was our goodness gracious players of the day. Two players making their 2021 debuts. Joe Adell, obviously more of a priority on waivers, but you know, Luis Gil, if you play in a deeper league, especially AL only, you know, definitely worth a flyer. We'll see if he can stick in the rotation. Let's move on to some of the injuries, news and notes. From Tuesday, starting with Eloy Jimenez, was back in the lineup for the White Sox. That's a good sign. He DH'd after missing 4 days with a groin injury. So hopefully he can stay healthy moving forward. Obviously has been an issue so far this season. Jacob deGrom says his current elbow issue is different from the forearm tightness he felt earlier in the season, and that this is the first time his elbow has actually hurt. So I guess that's good news.
Sounds like bad news to me.
It sounded like he was trying to spin it as good news, but certainly not how I took it. He does expect to pitch again this season, but, you know, we'll see. Trey Turner, who's on the COVID-19 IL, will join the Dodgers on Friday, but may not be activated for a few more days. He still has to clear through protocols. Jordan Montgomery, as we mentioned earlier, was placed on the COVID-19 IL after he was tested positive. Jazz Chisholm was placed on the COVID-19 IL as well. It's not clear if he tested positive or not. And Matt Barnes was placed on the COVID-19 IL, but he has tested negative. So could have just been a close contact, and sounds like he could be back within a day or two if everything goes right. So I think that's it for the COVID-19 IL. That is becoming increasingly an issue across the league as cases rise. Moving on, Kevin Biggio was placed on the IL with neck stiffness. So, he was on the IL earlier with a neck issue. So maybe that can explain why he struggled so much this season. Mookie Betts started at second base for the second game that he started at second base for the Dodgers. I don't know if that was the second game in a row that he started, but only three more games until he's second base eligible. Only eight more until he has it for next season. I don't know if that's actually going to happen, but,
It hurts his chances that Trey Turner's about to debut here for the Dodgers, because I suspect Trey Turner would be making the majority of the starts at second base, but... Betts has made some good plays over there and maybe opened Dave Roberts' eyes. I'd actually forgotten. It wasn't just the minors where Mookie Betts played.
Yeah, he started at second with the Red Sox.
Yeah, he played his rookie year for the Red Sox. He played 14 games there. He mostly played outfield, but, got some clear exposure to that position even as a major leaguer prior to this year.
All right, Rhys Hoskins was back in the lineup after missing several days with a groin injury himself, so that's good news. Trevor Rogers was placed on the family medical emergency list. No details on that or any sense of how long he's going to be out. I hope everything's okay. Tyler Glasnow will have Tommy John surgery on Wednesday. Andrew Benintendi left Tuesday's game with a left shoulder strain suffered while stealing a base. Kyle Freeland, pitcher for the Rockies, left after being hit by a comebacker on the foot. Tommy La Stella should be back on Wednesday. He's been out since May with hamstring injury and then a fractured thumb. Do you think he's going to play much for the Giants, though?
I mean, he wasn't playing every day.
Yeah.
Even before he got hurt. And certainly since then, other players have had a chance to emerge and entrench themselves. So I would suspect not. I would guess it's a semi-regular role for La Stella, probably not much against lefties.
All right, Brandon Nimmo was back in the lineup after missing a couple of games with a hamstring injury. Brad Keller, with a back injury, expects to make his next start. Jose Urquidy will throw off a mound Wednesday or Thursday as he works his way back from a shoulder injury. Gio Urshela was placed on the IL, backdated to August 1st. It does sound like the Yankees expect that to be a minimum stay on the IL, so he could be back within a week. John Axford, this one sucks. He made his first appearance in a major league game on Monday night, first since 2018, 37-year-old John Axford, who was throwing 98 miles an hour and pitching really well in the minors for Toronto, left with elbows discomfort. He's going to have tests. He was placed on the IL. So that's just a bummer for him as he was trying to make his comeback. And the Nationals recalled catcher Riley Adams, who was part of the deal to get Brad Hand to the Blue Jays. Any interest in Riley Adams? The Blue Jays just have a factory of interesting catchers, it seems, in their minors.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the best one is probably, I hope I get this name right, Gabriel Moreno.
It feels like there's been a different best one 3 years in a row.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, he's missed some time recently with an injury, but first 32 games at Double A, Gabriel Moreno had hit .373 with a .1092 OPS. Mm-hmm. But we're not talking about him right now. We're talking about Riley Adams. And
he's appeared in 117 games between Triple A and Double A, 18 home runs, low batting average.
Feels kind of like a Yan Gomes.
Yeah,
profile.
Pretty typical, like, hey, maybe he can be a low end starting catcher and in a best case scenario kind of guy.
Right.
All right. We got a handful of players who are working their way back from injuries. Some high upside players. And, well, there's one guy who's not on there. Maybe I should have just left him out. But Alex Bregman, certainly a high upside player. He returned to the AAA lineup on Tuesday. He had missed a couple of games with a hamstring coming back from that quad injury. Was expected to play all nine innings Tuesday. I haven't seen if he did, but assuming he makes it through that, Alex Bregman could be back within the next couple of days. So hopefully everything's okay there. Adalberto Mondesi, this was kind of a surprise. You know, obviously, we talked about yesterday Dayton Moore's comments that, you know, Mondesi, they're not really viewing him as a full-time player, or at least someone that they can rely on as a full-time player moving forward. But I didn't realize he was so close to making his return, but he made his rehab debut on Tuesday. Only played three innings at shortstop. So I would guess this is going to be kind of a lengthy rehab, but it's good to see Adalberto Mondesi back, and hopefully he can finish the season strong and, you know, maybe, I mean, honestly, maybe steal 20 bases in the last 2 months of the season. It's not out of the question. Luis Severino, like you mentioned earlier, he's coming back from that groin injury that he was suffered while making his first rehab appearance. He only threw 43 pitches over 2 1/3 innings. So obviously, as we've seen with Chris Sale, you're probably looking at a 5 or 6 start range for Luis Severino before he comes back. Although maybe a little less, just because he had gone through the process of building up his arm earlier before the groin injury. We'll see. Ian Anderson, coming back from that shoulder soreness, will begin a rehab assignment Thursday, and it sounds like he may only need one, maybe two rehab starts before he's back. So, you know, probably not next week for your fantasy team, but maybe the following week. And Pablo Lopez has begun throwing off of flat ground. He's been throwing from about 90 feet, so still fairly early in the process as he returns back from his own shoulder woes. Scott, fantasy trade deadlines are coming up. I think the default is this week. I know in the Scott White Dynasty League, it was Saturday of last week. I ended up standing pat. I just didn't get any offers that were worthwhile. I got a few interesting ones, but I wanted
to. You weren't making the offers yourself, Chris? You weren't working the phones?
No, not really. I just don't have much to offer. Like, everybody wanted
Well, you're in the playoff hunt this year for the first time.
Well, everybody. No, I made the playoffs in that league before. Excuse me.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Everybody wanted my star players. I was like, guys, I'm a star player. I'm not going to trade my guys. But yeah, we're coming up on the trade deadline in most leagues, either this week or next week. And what I wanted to do is, over the last couple of months of the season, Scott, give me, I don't know if you have five players that you're looking to trade for, but give me an amount up to five of of players you're trying to trade for before your deadlines, or probably potentially more accurately, five players you would suggest our listeners try to trade for before the deadline.
Yeah, that's probably more accurate. I'm mostly focused on high end types here.
Sure.
Because I feel like, you know, I could hype Brendan Rodgers again as a trade candidate. He's unrostered in half of leagues currently, so, you know,
you should trade for him. It kind of
goes without saying, if it's a deep league where he's rostered, that, you know, he would also make for a good trade candidate. But we usually talk about players like that in the context of adds and drops. So, thinking higher end than that, I think the most obvious name is Trevor Story.
Yeah.
He didn't get traded. And that was the hesitance we had in identifying him as a buy low candidate. Oh, but what happens when the Rockies move him and he doesn't have Coors Field anymore? Look at the road numbers, look at Nolan Arenado, blah, blah, blah. Is he really going to have this resurgence if he's out of Colorado? Off the table now. And I should point out, because I've gotten this on Twitter a couple times, people like, oh, you know, players pass through waivers in August and can be traded. That's not true anymore. Yeah. It's July deadline is a hard deadline now. There are no more trades that are going to happen.
It was not July 31st this year, right?
No, because they didn't want it on a Saturday for whatever reason. Yeah.
I didn't realize that until like Sunday. I was like, wait a minute.
As somebody who doesn't normally work Saturday, I appreciate that.
You don't normally work Friday either.
That's true, but no, we don't need to get into all that. Anyway, so same strikeout rate as always for Trevor Story.
Yep.
Exit velocity, hard hit rate, everything looks pretty normal. The normal indicators for Trevor Story look normal. And I know we're 2/3 of the way through the season and there hasn't been a bounce back yet, but I'm still thinking it's going to happen. So Trevor Story is one. Pete Alonso.
And I will point out his expected home runs this season, which is, you know, based on, just like any expected stat on Baseball Savant, based on how hard a ball is hit, where it's hit, all that stuff, is 21.6. He only has 13. So that's just something to keep in mind. It might be, I would guess that there's a little inflation there because the ball travels further in Coors Field, but it's a large park, so they'll give you an expected home run that you might not otherwise have gotten, something like that. I don't know, because he has been under his expected home runs each of the last three seasons, but still, we're talking 4 in 2019 and 2 in 2020, 9 so far this season. So, yeah.
Pete Alonso.
Yes.
You referred to this yesterday. Swinging strike, or not swinging strike. That's all I ever talk about, right? Strikeout percentage, strikeout rate is down below 20% for the year. His first 2 years, it was above 25%. He's always made more contact than you'd expect for a guy who is clearly a power first type hitter. But the contact rate this year is like legitimately good.
Yeah, 77.7% contact rate for his career at 74%.
Yeah. And he's been hot lately, but I still think there's a chance he could sustain this hot streak longer and improve his season long numbers up to 24 home runs and 834 OPS now, batting 256. But I moved him up in my rest of season rankings at first base. I think I moved him up to 5 ahead of guys like Jose Abreu and, I mean, certainly Cody Bellinger. Cody Bellinger's way down there for me now. There's like an obvious top four. I think it's Guerrero, Freeman, Olsen, and Muncy, and then Alonso. I slotted him right behind them. So yeah, he's a good candidate to buy here. Aaron Nola, I think the most obvious underachiever among pitchers who can clearly make a huge impact to your team, still has an ERA over 4. The home run rate is up. The fly ball rate is up. And for a pitcher who normally works down in the zone, that kind of clues you into the struggles he's been having. And he's talked about it too. It's just having to keep the ball down. The last two starts he's done a much better job of that. And I think he's going to be good enough at self-diagnosis. And we've seen him overcome kind of rough stretches in the past. I think he's well on his way, and the strikeout numbers have been amazing all year. So nothing to worry about there from Aaron Nola. The timing may not be optimal since his last two starts were good, but doesn't hurt to make an offer. Still has a 4.30 ERA overall.
Yeah. And what I would point out is maybe you're skeptical because he did have a bad 2019, or at least a 3.87 ERA in 2019. It was disappointing for sure. That season, his peripherals were actually slightly worse than his outcomes. His xERA was 4.26. His FIP was 4.03 compared to the 3.87 ERA. This season, his peripherals are actually a little better. You're talking about a 3.64 xERA, 3.46 FIP, compared to a 4.30 ERA. So that is certainly a reason to be optimistic about Aaron Nola. And, again, like you mentioned, we might already be seeing the turnaround.
Frankie Montas. I love the direction Frankie Montas is going here. Again, I'm wondering if it's too late to act because his last four starts have been awesome. But it's less that they've been awesome than how they've been awesome. 20 plus swinging strikes in 3 of those 4 starts. His split finger fastball, which was the key to his breakout 2 years ago. It's working for him better than ever because now he's made it his primary pitch. I mean, even
34% of the time with it, in the month of July.
Even when he broke through with it in 2019, it was like his third most used pitch. I mean, the volume wasn't using it a ton, but it was very effective when he did, and it kind of helped the rest of his arsenal play up. But now it's just like he's just pounding that splitter.
Yeah, he doubled his usage in the month of July, and despite doubling his usage of the splitter, he allowed a 0.096 wOBA with the pitch, a 0.103x wOBA, 57% whiff rate with his splitter, despite doubling his usage. That's a really promising sign. And you're getting some Kevin Gausman vibes there.
still a 4.08 ERA for the season. And, I mean, you know, if the person who has him now has had him all along, they probably had their moments of frustration with him. And a lot of times what can happen in these scenarios is they think they're selling high.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, yes, I'm dumping Montas on somebody, but actually you're the one who wins. So I think Montas could be the ace he was looking like he was becoming in 2019. He may be living up to that after all. And one last name I'll throw in here, Anthony Rizzo. I just think Yankee Stadium is the perfect venue for him.
Yeah.
The StatCast expected home run by Park would seem to suggest that. They say he'd have 9 more home runs if he played all his games at Yankee Stadium than he actually has. That's a significant number, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, a guy who pulls the ball in the air a lot. And that's for a left-handed hitter going to Yankee Stadium. That's a very good thing. Doesn't strike out much still. Makes hard contact, harder than ever, actually, this year. So I think there's more in the tank for Anthony Rizzo. And it's a good time to buy in on him.
I agree. I agree with all of those, Scott. Good job.
Thank you.
All right. That's gonna do it for 5 players Scott would like to trade for. If you have any more, if you have any trade questions heading into your deadline, I feel like tomorrow and Friday, we should probably try to answer a whole bunch of trade questions given that the deadline's coming up. So send them over at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Maybe put trade in the subject line so we can, you know, point it out, pick it out from the crowd and make sure we get to them. But yeah, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com would be the email address for that. We will be right back. And then after we come back, we're going to talk about the worryometer. We're going to fire it up, talk about some players we may or may not be worried about. So stick right here. We'll be right back.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
And we're right back. Worryometer Wednesday. I'm never sure quite how to calibrate this because some of the players I think are obviously worrisome. Some of the players might not even belong on this list because they're just not good enough anymore. And then some of them, it's just like, why are you even asking? Of course we're not worried. And of the latter, I think the first player up probably falls in there, but I'm interested to see what you think. Zach Wheeler, 7 1/3 innings today, which is great, but 8 hits versus a bad Washington Nationals lineup. 4 earned runs allowed, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, only 8 whiffs on 105 pitches. He's got a 4.36 ERA with 31 strikeouts and 33 innings over his last 5 starts. You know, early on in the season, he was looking like he had put together the contact suppression skills from last season with, you know, the strikeout rates from earlier on. The strikeout rate flagging a little bit. 0-10, where are you on Zach Wheeler on the worry-o-meter?
I'll go as high as 4. I mean, I don't think Zach Wheeler is going to become a negative asset for you, you know, a detriment to your team. That's not a realistic scenario, but... Remember, he had that stretch of 5 starts in May and June where 4 of them were double-digit strikeout efforts, and we're like, oh my gosh, he's becoming an ace, the ace of aces. And he hasn't had a double-digit strikeout effort in now 9 starts since then.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, just let me see. Is it even a strikeout per inning? So he had 58 strikeouts in 56 and 2/3 innings. So right out of strikeout per inning during that 9 start stretch for Zach Wheeler, which is, you know, looking a lot more like
Zach Wheeler,
the Zach Wheeler we've always known. So, you know, I'm worried we may have overstated his value at one point. But I'm not worried about, is he going to be good or bad? He's going to be good. Even in this start, six shutout innings, and they just kind of, you know, if they had taken him out after the sixth inning, we wouldn't even be talking about this start right now.
Yeah. One thing that you can see with Zach Wheeler is his whiff rates have gone down as the season has gone on. I mean, in May, his curveball had a 65% whiff rate, which is just ridiculous and was totally unsustainable. He settled in around 41% with that pitch over the last in June and July. But July, he had his lowest whiff rate for his slider, his lowest whiff rate with his changeup. Since April, he had his second lowest whiff rate with his four-seam fastball. So, you know, it's just kind of like it's nothing looks alarming. It just everything's kind of gotten a little bit worse, which, you know, sometimes the great start to a season turns out to be, wow, this guy is a new player. Usually you won't go broke betting on some regression. And that's what we're seeing with Wheeler. I think we've seen a little bit of that with Kevin Gausman as well. Joe Musgrove might be the ultimate example, having kind of an opposite Joe Musgrove season, awesome in April and just worse every month since then. But yeah, I agree with that on Wheeler. He's still likely to be must start moving forward. I think there's very little chance he's not a must start starting pitcher. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, a guy who may not belong on this list at all, just because we should probably maybe be done with him. Zach Plesac, 5 innings, 10 hits, 6 earned runs, 0 walks, and also 0 strikeouts. He has 1 quality start since coming off the IL. He has a 5.74 ERA with 14 strikeouts in 26 and 2/3 innings. Worryometer on Zach Plesac. Can you even calibrate the worryometer for him, or is this a drop a meter situation?
Yeah, I think I'm past the point of worrying about him. So I guess that makes him a 10. You know, that last stat you cited, 14 strikeouts in 26 and 2/3 innings since returning. It's about as bad as it gets. He is a great control pitcher. I think he's validated that from that. You know, he's kind of like, he's kind of like Josh Tomlin 2.0 for the, or is that the right guy? Josh Tomlin.
You know what makes me think of is Ricky Nolasco.
You always want to compare everybody to Ricky Nolasco. Nolasco is actually good at getting strikeouts, though.
He had a couple.
Josh Tomlin, elite control pitcher who serves up a bunch of home runs and doesn't miss bats.
Yeah. That's what Plesac looks like right now.
Yeah. I dropped him in a 12-team league recently that is I'm doing horribly in. In fact, it may be the worst I've ever done in a fantasy baseball league, this league. And yet Zach Plesac wasn't even good enough for me there. So, yeah, we're done with Zach Plesac, I think. At least until he, you know, unless he starts looking good again at some point. But it hasn't happened this year.
It seems kind of unlikely. All right. Yeah. Move on to Tyler Mahle, who, you know, has kind of been in a slide for a little while. On Tuesday, he allowed 4 earned runs in 5 innings versus the Twins, 6 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. What about Tyler Mahle on the worryometer?
I don't know.
Well, that makes me think it's a good question.
Yeah, I'll go right down the middle of 5, I guess, because I don't want to make it sound like I'm more worried about Zach Wheeler than Tyler Mahle. I just think this is kind of what Tyler Mally's been doing all year, right? Mm-hmm. Like too many walks.
That's the
not
thing.
Not enough innings.
The walks are where it's gotten really bad lately, because it had been at least under control, but coming into today, he had 16. So he's got 18 walks in his last 32 1/3 innings over 6 starts. That's where he's really getting into trouble lately.
Yeah, he feels like just a guy to use when the matchups are right or when he's making a 2-star week. Still pretty good at missing bats, you know, still well more than a strikeout per inning. So it's not like we're on the verge of dumping Mahle. I don't know, maybe in like a 10-team league you might consider it, but most of us wouldn't. I just think he's, you know, you got to keep your expectations in check with Tyler Mahle. He hasn't been an emerging ace like we thought he potentially could be coming into the year. But then again, that was pretty obvious early on.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking at this and I feel like Kenta Maeda probably doesn't belong here. He did give up 5 earned runs in 5 innings, 7 hits, 9 strikeouts, which is very good, continuing the trend for him. And he had a 2.15 ERA coming into this start over his previous 5 in the month of July. Are you a 0 on Kenta Maeda at this point or a 1? Maybe a 2?
2. I'll go 2. Yeah, I mean, it's still a really low number. Definitely looked great in July. Looks like his splitter's fixed. I still don't know. I still don't know exactly what a fixed Kenta Maeda is. Like, is he?
Sure. We had
2020.
Yeah, we had 11 great starts or 12 great starts, whatever it was last season.
Yeah,
but and he'd so never pitched I don't before.
I don't want to expect 2020 Kenta Maeda, but I mean he's back to being an asset in fantasy where for the first 3 months he wasn't.
What about Taijuan Walker? Gave up 4 earned runs in 5 2/3 innings against the Marlins. Obviously, Taijuan Walker got off to a really good start, made the All-Star game. Worryometer on Taijuan Walker.
4 straight awful starts. The ERA has gone from 250 to 386 during that time. And, you know, the underlying numbers were never favorable. Mm-hmm. The XFIP, that some would say I cite too often. You know, for most of the year, it was about what his ERA now is. It's gone up as the ERA has gone up here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it turns out it was telling no lies about Taijuan Walker. And so I would say Taijuan Walker is a nice, solid 8 on the worryometer.
Yeah, he's got 19 strikeouts to 15 walks over his last 25 and 2/3 innings of work. So not exactly what you want to see. And let's go with a hitter. A couple weeks ago, I was a 0 on Whit Merrifield. I think we, when we did one of our Q&A panels coming out of the All-Star break, I think one of the questions was like something like, who's going to break out in the second half? And my pick was Whit Merrifield, and that has not happened so far. He is hitting .221 since July 1st with a 19.6% strikeout rate. 19.6% strikeout rate would obviously be pretty good for most hitters, but it would be the worst of Whit Merrifield's career. He did have a 12-game hitting streak coming into today. You probably didn't hear about it because it might have been the worst 12-game hitting streak in Major League history. He had a 634 OPS, exactly one hit, I believe in 11 of the 12. So Whit Merrifield, 0 to 10, where are you on the worry meter? Worry-o-meter.
Maybe like a one. He's had 2 excellent months and 2 terrible months. But yeah, even the terrible months, he's ran a lot, you know. The stolen bases have been there. He's had no fewer than 5 steals in any month, and he's only been caught stealing once all season. So you can continue to do that, you're going to remain valuable in fantasy. I thought it was kind of strange that, you know, he was rumored to be somebody who could be moved at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
With the Mariners specifically showing interest. And there was talk about how the Royals asking price was very high for him. And, you know, it seemed like Mariners fans were enthusiastic about getting him. And I just wonder, I mean, obviously he's valuable in fantasy, but he's a low OBP guy who doesn't hit for much power. You know, his OPS this year is low 700s. I'm just not sure. I mean, this is kind of not a fantasy relevant point.
Yeah.
But I wonder, I feel like his fantasy value has exaggerated his real life value.
Yeah, I mean, he was a 3.6 WAR player in 2019. He's been at 3.2 in 2020 plus 2021, which is 164 games. So, you know, solid starter. You know, low-level all-star player. Probably, you know, on a team that had more deserving all-stars, maybe he doesn't make it. But, you know, I don't know. He's a good player. He's not a great player. It is interesting. He was actually caught stealing on his very first attempt of the season. So he has 20. He had a steal and a caught stealing in that game. He was caught in his first attempt. He has 27 straight steals without being caught. That's pretty impressive. Go with Merrifield. And remember 2019, I think, we thought he might stop running.
And he's 20 out of 30 that year. Yeah.
Led the majors two straight seasons now, I believe. Or no, he didn't lead the majors last season. His teammate did, but he was up there. All right, so that's it for the Worryometer. Let's, I just want to take your temperature on a handful of pitchers who I feeling good.
Yeah,
I'm clammy. Okay.
No, nobody's putting me on the IL.
All right, good, good. So where are we at on Yusei Kikuchi? ERA's 3.89, had a rough July, but the underlying numbers have been, I mean, really, as they have been for most of his career when things have gone bad, his underlying numbers were still pretty good. He went six innings, gave up one earned run, six hits, two walks, five strikeouts against the Rays on Tuesday. How do you view Yusei Kikuchi at this point?
I was hoping you could tell me how to view Yusei Kikuchi. You know, it's not just that the production has been down, the velocity's been down. Mm-hmm. Since the start of June.
He's tweaked his pitch arsenal in some ways that I don't necessarily think have been super productive for him. He threw his cutter a lot less in the month of July, his changeup a lot more. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. The problem there is the cutter has gotten hit hard recently, and so maybe that's a decent trade-off, but, you know, the overall numbers didn't really justify it, at least in the month of July.
I feel like he could be one of those pitchers who just kind of has too much of an arsenal for his own good, which we talked about with Yu Darvish recently. Mm-hmm. And I think Joe Musgrove, that might be kind of his problem as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, it can make him pretty inconsistent at times. The start was good,
yeah.
And you know, overall, he's having a good season. So, I think I'm still in a good place with Yusei Kikuchi, but obviously, my trust in him is diminished a bit. You might say he's now on the outer edges of the circle of trust instead of being firmly in it.
He's kind of been between 45 and 55 at SP for me pretty much all season. He does have a 23.4% home run to fly ball rate, which is, you know, I think obviously unsustainable. However, his XERA is actually slightly worse than his ERA. It was 4.28 coming into today's start. He had a 4.01 ERA. So that suggests that, you know, maybe it's not all bad luck. You know, he does get hit pretty hard. A 10% barrel rate allowed, 91 mile per hour average exit velocity. He could be one of those guys that just, for whatever reason, underperforms, you know, his kind of surface level numbers. So I think we're kind of at the same place we've been at with Yusei Kikuchi all along, or at least for me. You know, I was high on him coming into the season. He's been right around 45 to 55 for pretty much the entire season for me. Where are we at on Dylan Cease, who had an extremely, extremely good start today? 23 whiffs, I think, on 100-plus pitches, 11 strikeouts, 6 innings, 1 hit allowed, 2 walks. That's coming off of a 5.33 ERA in July, and it was just his fourth quality start in 12 tries since June. Is Dylan Cease the most frustrating pitcher in baseball right now?
I could see that. I can't relate to the experience of having Dylan Cease much, because for as much as I've liked him and have talked him up this year, I don't think I actually have him anywhere. Mm-hmm. But I could see how that would be frustrating. Fortunately, his previous start was good. It was a quality start at the Royals, so hopefully that convinced you to have him active for this game. And I think he was in line for two starts as well, so there's a good chance he was started in a lot of places where he's rostered, so thankful for that.
There was concern about, like, his, I think his spin rates dropped precipitously.
They did.
June,
they did.
And
they were fine today.
And you can look at that and say, well, maybe he, you know, maybe that's why he struggled. But, like, he's actually been pretty much just as consistent as he was before that. I mean, he's been above a strikeout per inning in all but three of his starts since the start of June. Dylan Cease has. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to figure out.
At the same time, I looked at this stat line and I said, you know, especially taking into account all the swinging strikes, wow, did Dylan Cease just have his best start of the year? And I looked through the game log here and I was like, well, no, you could say that one's better. Yeah. And that one might be better. That one might be better. You know, he's had several awesome starts like this.
Yeah.
I would say where I'm at with Dylan Cease is, you know, not super trustworthy, but you know, the strikeouts are going to be there. And just like from a development standpoint, this year has been very encouraging. Huge step forward.
Yes.
Especially compared to where we were on him last year, where he struck out less than 7 per 9. And I didn't know if he was ever going to put it together at that point. Definitely on the right track now.
And Dylan Cease is going to be the reason why I'll always be interested in Mitch Keller.
Yeah, that's I could see that.
Yeah. Where are we at on Max Fried? 6 shutout innings, 7 strikeouts, 1 walk, 4 hits allowed against the Cardinals today. Had a 4.66 ERA in July with 32 strikeouts, 10 walks, and 29 innings pitched. Is Max Fried the most frustrating pitcher in baseball?
No, I wouldn't say so.
No?
I'm in a good place with Max Fried. 3 of his last 4 starts have been great.
I just mean holistically. You look at the 4.02 ERA in 2019, 2.25 in 2020, 4.32 entering the start. Obviously, it went down a little bit.
If you looked at Max Fried's numbers from last year, 2.25 ERA, 7-0 record, mm-hmm. 5th in Cy Young voting, and you thought that's who Max Fried was, then I could understand you being frustrated with him. But if you were listening to this show, that wasn't who you thought Max Fried was, because we were telling you he overachieved last year. Since April, because remember, he got off to a horrible start, mm-hmm. and then he went on the IL for like a month. So since he got back from the IL, which goes back to May 5th, he has a 3.35 ERA. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, 3.35 ERA, right at a strikeout per inning. The WHIP, I can't figure out exactly what the WHIP is, but it's not bad. Yeah, he's been good.
All right, and one more. Where are we at on Hyunjin Ryu? He has only gone at least 6 innings in 3 of his last 6 starts since July 1st. He went 7 today, 2 earned runs, 8 strikeouts. But with a 2.67 ERA, 30 strikeouts, and 33 and a third innings, are we pretty much where we expected to be on Hyunjin Ryu now?
I wouldn't say so. He's been less of a strikeout pitcher, and I'm not sure he's going to get that back. We got to remember he's 34 years old.
Yes.
So 3 of his last 4 starts have been great. You know, not as much of a strikeout rate as we're used to seeing, but a good outcome. He's a good control pitcher. He's a good ground ball pitcher. He doesn't necessarily need the strikeouts. And his ERA is back down to 3.22 now. So
I was shocked when I saw that.
Yeah. Yep. Not having a bad season. It's just a testament to how good he's been the last couple seasons that we could feel let down by him, because the numbers, you know, still a very valuable pitcher.
All right, moving on. Is there anything here with Chris Bubich? 6 innings, 3 earned runs, 8 strikeouts versus the Chicago White Sox. Anything worth looking at here?
There may be 4 quality starts in a row, and I wanted to check and see how consistent it's been, you know, since with those 4 good starts, if his changeup has consistently played up, because I know he got 5 whiffs on 22 changeups in this start. It's obviously a solid whiff rate. Let's see here how that changeup has been doing in general, because the changeup was like
the pitch.
That was a killer pitch for him in the minors. Yeah. You look at Bubich's minor league numbers, he was carving up those guys with that changeup.
Changeup whiff rate over the last 3 starts, it was 40% or better in 2 of the last 3, only 24% before today's start and the last start before today. But pretty much the best stretch of the season for him as far as his changeup whiff rate goes.
Yeah, I just wonder if he's like regained the feel for that pitch or something, mm-hmm. because that was kind of his everything. And, you know, it was beating up on hitters in the lower levels in the minors, so maybe they'd just never seen a changeup before. I don't know. but yeah, he was dominant down there, and that pitch was often cited as the reason for it. So if he's getting better results with that pitch now, you know, I don't think there's a huge ceiling here for Chris Bubich, but it's possible he could be back to being a streamer type in fantasy.
15 teams worth rostering?
I mean, he's right on the verge of that now. I'd be reluctant to start him yet, I guess, if I was looking to preserve ratios. But there may be something here.
Anything here with Nick Nieder? 3 earned runs against the Mets, 5 strikeouts. He has I believe around a 4 ERA for the season now. He's only made a handful of appearances. Anything here outside of NL-only leagues?
I would say not at this point, no.
Okay. What about Alex Jackson? Let's just keep the Marlins train rolling, baby. The most interesting team in baseball. Alex Jackson hit his first career home run for Miami, and the slightly more interesting thing is that the Marlins started Jorge Alfaro in left field. You got to get that Alex Jackson bat in the lineup. Is he someone who has any value in a 12-team 2 catcher league?
I would say not. I would be very surprised if he hit well enough to have that kind of... Oh, you know what? His numbers at AAA this year are much better than they have been.
His numbers overall at AAA are kind of bonkers.
Yeah.
He has 42 home runs. 42 home runs in 150 games at AAA. Not nearly as good in AA, but had, you know, hit earlier in his career. That's why I ask. He was somewhat of a prospect.
Yeah, no, he was. I had pretty much written him off. I hadn't realized how productive he had been at AAA this year. It was a straight up trade, him for Adam Duvall, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
So I was kind of surprised that's all the Marlins wanted, given my interpretation of who Alex Jackson was now. Okay, let's keep an eye on him. Let's keep an eye on him. He has moved into and out of the prospect radar as many times as I can, as a player ever has. And former number 6 overall pick for the Mariners, and then fell off the map, and the Braves bought low on him and moved him back to catcher, and then he was back on the prospect radar, and then he stunk and he was back off, and we'll see.
And watch out, only 4 more appearances for Jorge Alfaro to get outfield eligibility, so could be a game changer.
We wait with bated breath.
Here's a guy who could pick up outfield eligibility. Hoy Park started and hit leadoff for the Pirates versus Adrian Hauser. He went 1-for-3 with 3 RBI and a walk. Yankees fans kind of turned Hoy Park into a folk hero this season for how good he was hitting at AAA. 327 with a 1,042 OPS, 46 walks, 46 strikeouts in 48 games. 10 homers, 8 steals. There is the potential for a pretty appealing fantasy profile here for the 25-year-old Hoy Park. Is there anything here?
Maybe. I think anytime a player puts up numbers like he has in the minor leagues, you got to pay attention to it. Never really hyped as a prospect before, and it didn't seem like the Yankees held him in high regard, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I'd bet against him becoming a viable fantasy asset, but, you know, it's at least worth keeping an eye on him.
All right, let's talk about some bullpen notes. Dylan Floro gave up his first run since June 14th, but still got the save for the Marlins. Does appear as if he is the closer for the Miami Marlins. Jose Alvarado got the save for the Phillies. That was probably because Ian Kennedy threw 49 pitches the previous 2 days. But with Ian Kennedy giving up two run home runs in consecutive games since joining the Phillies, it's at least worth noting that Jose Alvarado was the one who got the save with Kennedy unavailable, with Ranger Suarez moving to the rotation as well.
I'm putting together a bullpen report where I kind of give the pecking order of some bullpens that are currently in flux. Mm-hmm. And I had left Jose Alvarado completely out of the pecking order for the Phillies. I had several guys ahead of him. So now I'll move him up in that pecking order. He looks like the backup option for saves. I don't know. It might be a matchup thing with him and Harris, but of course, Ian Kennedy looks like he has the job.
Yeah, I think it's Ian Kennedy's job unless he loses it.
Right.
Diego Castillo got the save for the Mariners with Paul Sewald working the eighth inning. So it does seem like that's going to be the case moving forward, even if Castillo's been, a little shaky, had blown his previous save attempt. Alex Colomé got the save for the Twins. No surprise there. Heath Hembree gave up 3 runs, blew his save opportunity today. They are pretty much back at full strength now, right? Lucas Sims is back. Michael Lorenzen is back.
Lorenzen, is Sims back?
Is he back quite yet?
I don't think he's back quite yet. I just think he was gearing up to return.
Okay, he was. But. Yeah, he is not quite back yet. Could be. He made 3 appearances at AAA Louisville during his rehab assignment. Okay, yeah. So no timetable specifically, but it seems like Lucas Sims could be back soon. So something to keep an eye on. With Hembree imploding.
Yeah, I would say Hembree doesn't have that job on lockdown. I mean, I wonder if Michael Givens is going to become
closer experience.
This point. Yeah, closer experience, and he'd put together, like, he's the one guy in that bullpen with a good ERA, right? And he was doing it at Colorado.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised the Reds didn't do more to upgrade their bullpen. I mean, I guess they're playoff chances are only so good, but it's been a mess all season, and I don't think there's no clarity in sight.
Sure. All right, let's talk about some, I guess we got a list of pitchers. Go ahead.
I did want to mention one bullpen note from the late games here. Tyler Clippard got his second save.
There you go.
There's nobody else in that bullpen, and Tyler Clippard is legitimately a good reliever if he is of sound body. He missed the first almost 4 months with injury. He only recently returned, but already has 2 saves, has yet to allow an earned run.
Tyler Clippard for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
We've got a list of pitchers here. I don't know how much there is to take away from anything from this list, but Patrick Corbin went 7 innings, gave up 4 earned runs, 8 strikeouts, 1 walk. It's fascinating how his velocity is like kind of back at its peak. He averaged 93.7 miles per hour with his fastball. And yet he had 14 strikeouts and 26 and a third innings in the month of July. So we were so interested in Patrick Corbin's velocity back in the spring, and it turns out it doesn't matter. He's just not good anymore, I guess.
well, this is the highest it's been all year, right?
It was the second highest. Yeah.
Yeah. And he did get 14 swinging strikes, 8 strikeouts. So maybe there does become a point where it's high enough to help him.
Yeah.
And again, he also served up 3 home runs. So
yep.
I'm not eager to jump back aboard the Patrick Corbin bandwagon.
Yeah, that makes sense. Adrian Hauser had a good start, 6 1/3, no hits allowed, 1 earned run. Always interesting how that happens, but you got 5 walks. That can happen. 4 strikeouts. Hauser's actually got a decent ERA. He gets a lot of ground balls, but he's pretty much just a streamer, right?
Yeah. Too many walks, high whip, not enough innings generally.
All right.
That's it for Hauser.
Let's talk about some hitters.
I was disappointed in Luis Patino's follow-up performance.
Yeah.
I would point that out, especially since it came against the Mariners. And you know how it is against the Mariners. He could have thrown a no-hitter.
3 earned runs in 5 innings, 5 hits, 2 walks, only 3 strikeouts in that one.
Yeah. Yeah, so I put in some pretty big bids for Patino in the leagues where he was available this weekend. I didn't win him in all of them. I got outbid in some. So I'm not eager to turn around to drop him right away. He's still got 12 whiffs on 100 pitches, 12 swinging strikes. So, kind of like with Touki Toussaint, I give him a little bit of a leash. There does seem to be potential here.
Sure. All right, we'll move on to some hitters before we close out with a look at Wednesday streamers. Abraham Toro hit another home run. That is 3 in 4 games, I believe, for him. George Springer, 2-for-4 with a home run, his third in six games. He's got 11 hits in that span. George Springer, you had to be patient with the injuries to start the season, but man, he has been, I mean, really as good as ever when he's been healthy this season. He's been incredible. Mitch Garver, also as good as ever, hit another home run today. Jonathan India, we talked a lot about yesterday, 2-for-5 with a home run today. And Jorge Soler was hitting second for the Braves, hit a home run. It does appear as if he's hitting relatively high in that lineup, which is kind of surprising.
It is kind of surprising.
Not exactly the guy who, not the type of profile you necessarily want at the beginning of the top of the lineup, but if he's going to hit up there and he's going to stay hot like he was before the trade, you know, there's certainly some appeal there for sure. All right, let's talk about some Wednesday streamers. Not necessarily the best crop, but let me know who you like best out of this group. Josh Fleming versus the Mariners, Matt Harvey versus the Yankees, Paolo Espino versus the Phillies, Steven Matz versus Cleveland, and Jake Odorizzi versus the Dodgers. Who you like best out of that? And if there's anyone I left off who you want, you like more, by all
means. I sure hope there's somebody you left off, because I don't want to sign my name to any of these names. Golly. I mean, Jake Odorizzi is probably the pitcher I trust the most, but he's going against the Dodgers. I don't know. Maybe Paolo Espino, who throws strikes and gives up a lot of fly balls that so far haven't turned into home runs. So, you know, fly balls that don't leave the park are generally outs, and that's why he's a good ERA and a good whip. But
I will say, I think Josh Fleming's okay. Against the Mariners, he's not a strikeout pitcher at all, under 6K per nine, but good control, very good ground ball rate. He's got a 4.15 ERA, which isn't great, but I could see a pretty decent start against the Mariners coming from Josh Fleming.
It could happen. I would not be betting.
It's not impossible, folks.
What about Steven Brault against the Brewers making his debut? His 2020 numbers were pretty good, actually.
Yeah. The Brewers aren't a good matchup anymore. I definitely would not want to rely on him in that one.
Oh, what about Tyone against the Orioles?
I wasn't sure if he qualified as a streamer. That could be good. I'm very skeptical of Tyone and his recent turnaround, but if he is available in your league, he could be worth using. I would actually say Eduardo Rodriguez is 80% rostered, so you know, not a lot of leagues where he's out there, but he's going against Detroit. He has quite good underlying numbers and quite bad numbers. So
also, the roster percentage is pretty high here for Zach Thompson, but going against the Mets, I'd be okay with that. I'd say Tyone and Thompson are my favorite. They're both, you know, there's a good chance they're not available in your league, but if they are and you're looking for a streamer, those I can at least kind of get behind.
All right. That's going to do it for Wednesday's episode of Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back on Thursday. Man, I'm doing it again. I thought I had somewhere to go with the outro, and now I'm just rambling. So I'm just going to close it out here. Thanks for listening, Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.